When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Who would have thought it? But here we are, season 6 of the Tapping Go. Happy Saturday, everyone. It's Freddie again, and thank you very much for joining me on what's going to be an epic roller coaster of a 5-part series. Today's episode is no different as we talk to another young sports person trying to make their way in the professional world. But before we introduce our guests, I want to mention five people who have all done something which provides a little bit more background to what we're going to chat about today on the podcast. Simon Kerr, Jonathan Tobin, Philip Billing, Adam Todd Hunter, and Kitty Williams. These five people have never met, but they all have something in common. They are trained in CPR, and because of this, they have been able to save someone's life. That's all I'm going to say in this introduction. My guest today is Morgan McRae. He suffered a cardiac arrest in August 2023 and is now on the path back to trying to play professional rugby. The next half an hour will be a bit of a rollercoaster of emotions, but I'm sure you'll enjoy it. So for all I can say, sit back, relax, and welcome to Series 6 of the Tap and Go. Morgan, thank you so much for joining me today. Firstly, do you just want to tell the listeners, for those who probably aren't aware of your story, a little bit more about you and where you were beforehand, and then obviously the last sort of 8 months and what's happened in your life?
So I've been a rugby player since kind of the age of five, and I've been lucky enough to do it as a profession since the age of 16. I signed my first contract with the Scarlets in Wales. So yeah, I've lived out a boyhood dream. I've done most things that I wanted to achieve. I've played for my country, and yeah, I'm unfortunately now trying to get back to it. So yeah, it's been a bit of a weird kind of roller coaster, but I mean, I've had the best career up till now, so just have to hope that continues.
Of course. Then you touched how now the goal is obviously for you to get back. Obviously, it was in 2023 when your incident happened, where your girlfriend Kitty found you going into cardiac arrest in a bedroom. Do you want to just tell everyone a little bit more and put the story into a bit more in context for everyone?
Yeah, so it was August 13th. We'd been up the day before we went up. Mates have just moved to London, as you kind of all do after uni. So went up there, visited them, saw the new house, and just she had a few drinks, nothing mental, and then stayed in my brother's house in Wimbledon. He was out seeing some friends, so I thought might as well have a place to crash there. So we both went back, and then it was about 6 a.m. Kitty found me, woke up to me snoring and trying to wake me up. Thought I was just being a bit annoying, and she couldn't sleep. So she was like, "Can you just shut up?" Basically, and then shook me, wasn't responding, and she was like, "Okay, you're actually starting to scare me now. Can you wake up?" wasn't responding. She kept shaking me, and then I fell out of bed. And then she knew something was up, and then ran round, and kind of eyes were to the back of my head. I was going blue, and she really kind of started to panic. So luckily, she knew CPR from when she was at Brooks. She did some CPR training there, so she started CPR, called the ambulance, and they kind of turned up 8 or 9 minutes later, I think it was. So she was doing CPR all that time. Then they took over. I did CPR for another 12 minutes, I think it was, and defibrillated me four times until they finally got something back, like a heart rate back on the fourth one. So yeah, she didn't know it at the time, but I had a cardiac arrest in my sleep. And then went on to go, they put me into a coma just to try and let everything recover and let my brain settle. So I was in a coma for 2 days and then spent another kind of 2.5-3 weeks in between ICU and in a cardiac ward in St. George's. So yeah, it's been pretty manic, and obviously now just trying to get back to daily life and life as it was before. It's been pretty crazy.
And just to emphasize for everyone listening, obviously you are, as we've already talked about your previous show, you were completely fit, healthy, no heart conditions running in the family or anything like that. So
no, no. Yeah.
No
heart conditions. I mean, I'd literally just come off the back of a really good preseason. So I'm probably the fittest I have been in my whole career. So yeah, really just out the blue, they put it down. They've described it as being struck by lightning. Something that is one in a million. It unfortunately just happened. There's done every single test they can. I've pretty much a couple of tests a day for 3 weeks. So they just can't find a reason behind it, which is frustrating. But at the same time, it's also good that I don't have a heart condition or anything more kind of sinister.
And obviously the heart's such a complex thing. Is it similar to what happened to Fabrice Muamba, Christian Eriksen, Tom Lockyer more recently, so looking at famous footballers, or is it a slightly different variant?
It's similar, as in we all had a cardiac arrest, but obviously Eriksen's kind of kept what happened to him pretty close to him and in his inner circle, so I don't think he's ever really spoken about it. So no one knows the actual reason behind his. And then Tom Lockyer, I think that was his second cardiac arrest. And I think he has a heart condition, but he's now been fitted with the same device I've got and that Eriksen's got. So I'm sure, all being well, he'll be back on the pitch sooner rather than later.
And so you talk about, so you've had the thing fitted into your chest. Is it, obviously it's a weird feeling, thinking that you've now got something which is, you rely on, in a sense, to pump blood around your body and for your heart to operate. But have you noticed it at all, as in a way that you're carrying out life and you're having to be aware of it? Or is it completely, you're trying to carry on as much normal as you can?
For the first like 2 weeks, I really noticed it, because obviously I was still, after the operation, still really sore, still had all the scars and everything, and they were also healing. So yeah, it's just there. It's underneath my armpit, kind of round to the side of my chest. So I don't notice it. It's not required all the time. It's just a small defibrillator. So it's just there in case my heart goes into another weird rhythm, that it will record it and it will shock my heart back into that normal rhythm. So basically it's like a first line of defense. And hopefully if anything happened again, touch wood, it doesn't, but I wouldn't need to be defibrillated by a kind of an external defibrillator, because I've got one in. So in a weird way, I don't notice it anymore. It's all healed and it's all kind of settled in my body. I can feel it sometimes if I lean on something, or if I'm sat in the car and the seats kind of hug round. So I know it's there because I can see it, but it's kind of just part of me now and just blends in, really.
And talk to me about the recovery process since the incident. What have you been doing? Obviously, are you limited in what are you building back up strength, or are you able to try and exercise that freely as you want? What have you sort of been doing?
In those kind of first 2-3 weeks coming out of hospital, I was pretty limited in terms of what I could do. I had to just rest and let myself recover. And then since pretty much the end of September, I've been back in training. So it started off where I could train, but I had to keep my heart rate under like a 140 limit, which was quite tough considering I've been in bed for three, four, just over 4 weeks. So obviously I would do anything. I'd do a set of squats and that would go straight up to 140. So that period, that kind of 2-3 weeks that I was like that for, was really quite frustrating, just because I felt like I literally couldn't do anything without my heart going absolutely mental. But then had some more tests, had an exercise test done, just to kind of give me the all clear. And since, I think it was mid-October, I've been back in full training, just the non-contact side of it, until we get this protection sorted. It's been good, and it's so nice to just be back into training and have that kind of release from day-to-day life.
You talk about needing to get protection sorted. What do you mean by that?
So I, just because of where the device is, I've basically just got to get almost like a foam shield made, just to protect the device and the leads from any impacts that they may take. Luckily, being underneath my arm, like underneath around my armpit, it's normally pretty covered in terms of if I was carrying or tackling. So it should be all right, but I've got to get a few things sorted, and it was all going well. And then we've had a bit of a hiccup in terms of World Rugby aren't as on board with it as we would have hoped. And they haven't approved the device that I was going to use. It's a company called VitalBeat, and they, Ericsson uses their shields, and it's heavily used across all sports. And they're just, because no one's done it in rugby before, and this would be a first, they're kind of stuck to their rules and regulations, which this is completely different from, and just won't comply. So it's annoying, but I mean, it will get there eventually, and we have to raise some money first.
Yeah, of course. And then obviously, physically, you've obviously had to use, talking about how you recover mentally as well. How have you sort of coped with it? And obviously, when you woke back up from your coma and going through it, must have been a gigantic shock to you what happened.
Yeah, it's been all right, to be fair, because I don't remember the first kind of week and a half of hospital, even though after coming out of the coma, I was awake and there pretty much. I don't remember anything. I don't know if that's my brain trying to, not remember all the nasty stuff, and it's almost like a coping mechanism. I don't know if that's why it's not remembered all of those kind of periods in ICU and all the nasty stuff. But yeah, I feel pretty like disconnected and disassociated from the whole thing, just because I don't have those memories of kind of being worried about if I was going to make it, and in that unknown, in like uncertain times. I only remember from when I was in the cardiac ward, and I was just there to be monitored for another week and a half or so. So yeah, I feel fine. I can't say my family feel exactly the same way, and obviously they all have their ups and downs, and Kit has her ups and downs, just because she was so directly involved in the whole thing. And yeah, it's been tougher on them than I would say it's been tougher on me.
And this might sound like a bit of a cliche, but has it changed your perspective on life and the way you sort of go forward?
Yeah, definitely. I'm just ridiculously lucky that I was in the right place at the right time. Like it all fell into place. I was staying at my brother's, which is 5 minutes around from St. 5 minutes around the corner from St. George's, one of the best cardiac hospitals in the UK. Kit wasn't meant to be staying with me that night. We only kind of agreed it, like sorted it out probably 4 or 5 hours before. So again, if she wasn't there, this would have been a completely different story. If I was back home and being in the middle of nowhere, getting an ambulance can normally take 30, 35 minutes. And by that time, the damage that would have been caused from kind of lack of oxygen to my brain would have been irreversible. And yeah, just it all felt, if it was going to happen, I'm glad it happened the way it did, just because, yeah, it could have been a completely different story and one that was probably a bit nastier.
Well, thank goodness for everything falling into place as it did then. And obviously, since then, you and Kitty have sort of set up your Instagram page, and you are both campaigning massively for CPR training, because obviously at the end of the day that has saved your life. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about SICD and everything?
Yeah, so we set up an Instagram account called My SICD and Me, and it's just a platform for basically us to share, for me to share my journey on getting back to the pitch, and then both of us to, for people to follow our journey in getting CPR, kind of raising that CPR awareness and the importance from it. And it's also a platform that if people that have been through similar experiences or have had family or friends affected by similar experiences, it's a place for them to reach out and just have an honest and frank chat. If they like get a couple of messages a day from people telling me their stories, and yeah, I feel so lucky that I was one of the ones who survived, because I mean the stats are pretty bleak in terms of the survival rate, and the number of out of hospital cardiac arrests is quite scary each year. So yeah, it's just a space that we can share our journey and people can share theirs, and just kind of working to try and improve that stat, which I was probably a bit naive in thinking that it would be relatively easy to do, but yeah, kind of before we started. But since starting, it's a mammoth task that is proving quite difficult, but we're kind of plugging away at it bit by bit.
So were you CPR trained before this all happened?
No, I wasn't. I've never been taught CPR in terms of playing at the clubs, because we've always had medical professionals there 24/7 pretty much. And I never taught at school. Kit was just in a very fortunate position that she was a captain of lacrosse at Brooks. So all the captains of the societies had to come in, I think, a couple of weeks before uni started, just because they needed someone first aid trained on the pitch at all times. Because obviously unis aren't blessed, unless you're kind of one of the top unis and playing in one of the first teams, that you don't always have ambulances next to you or physios with you the whole time. So yeah, there had to be someone trained, and thank God she did get it, because yeah, like I said, it could have been a completely different story if she didn't know it.
I think it's a bit of a waiting, because I always remember sort of you'd have those PSHE class or whatever at school, and the people would talk about it, and it's all going to be where you sit back and weren't really concentrating.
Yeah.
Clearly something that hasn't necessarily been given the time and time of day that it needs to. So hopefully, I mean, you guys are clearly doing something which will hopefully
break
a little more. And I've seen some of the stuff you've already been able to speak on radio stations and TV, etc. So fingers crossed. What sort of...
It's pretty nuts that you never think, you obviously hear about it and you hear about these horrible things happening in the news with kind of the more high profile cases that unfortunately have been going around in the past couple of years. So yeah, you always hear about it and it's never nice to hear about. And then you don't hear about it. You don't think it's ever going to be someone close to you, let alone you. So yeah, it's just like we say, it can happen anytime to any person anywhere. So it's unfortunately these aren't selective. They don't just pick and choose certain people. You can be fit and healthy, you can be running marathons every couple of years or running a marathon every year, and it can still happen to you. So yeah, it's pretty crazy.
What's the long-term goal for this? What do you think that, so it should almost come like a class at school, everyone should just know how to do CPR?
Yeah, well, that's what we want to achieve. So that CPR is in the kind of main curriculum, and it's one of the main things that are taught in schools. We've had kind of mixed people say that it's already taught in schools, but I've asked and I've never got taught. None of my friends have ever got taught. So I don't know. I think it just needs to be kind of a blanket across the whole country, saying this is being added to the curriculum, not individual schools kind of picking out there and then, because even though it's brilliant that people are getting taught, it's still not good enough. And if we can educate kind of these kids and get them CPR trained and get them feeling confident and comfortable enough that if they were ever required to use their skills, be that on a loved one or on a random member of the public that they stumble across, we want them to feel comfortable. And then from that, hopefully, our kind of end main goal, which is going to be quite a big task, is getting CPR kind of introduced into part of the driving test in the UK. So like you have to do your theory and you need your theory certificate number to book your practical. You'll need a theory and a kind of first aid course. You'll need those two certificate numbers to then go and book your practical, because but last year it was 2.5 million people took a theory, and then 1.5 went on to do their practical. And if we can just hit a random middle figure of like 2 million per se, that's 2 million people a year that are trained in first aid. And even if they're not driving, and they're just walking down the high street, or they're playing in their sport clubs, or they're just sat with their family on a Sunday evening and something happens, that's 2 million people a year that know how to perform CPR and help save a life.
I suppose, yeah, it's about finding sort of the right age to teach people, because if you're trying to teach 13, 14 year olds, you probably wouldn't get the take up or the success, but then would be teaching as having it part of the fresh curriculum at university for those who are fortunate to go to university too late. So I guess it is finding that middle ground, which I guess 5-17 year olds, it would make sense.
Mm.
A lot of people, some people are fortunate to get their hearts tested when they're at school or at a young age. Would your condition have been picked up by one of those heart tests, or is it one of those you don't know about until it's happened?
Yeah, unfortunately, because there's no heart condition found, they've just put it down to an ectopic heartbeat, which is an extra heartbeat that everyone has, and it just hit in the wrong point of my kind of my cardiac cycle and just sent my heart into an absolute frenzy. So now I've been screened by CRY, the main kind of cardiac risk in the young charity. I've been screened by them 4 times. With my time at the Scarlets, we got one done every year. So I've been screened loads, and nothing's ever been found. So unfortunately, in my case, it was just completely freak and a complete random incident. But I know that we've had CRY down to Henley Rugby Club, and we screened 70 of the men and women and some of the younger boys. So yeah, it's just for the money you pay, I think it was 40 quid per person or something, and I would pay triple that or even more than that just to make sure my heart was okay.
Yeah. And so obviously you're now waiting to hear about the Shield and when it's allowed. Short-term, long-term goals playing rugby, is it to aim to get back to where you were? Is it just to be able to play week in, week out for a club? What are your sort of hopes?
I think short-term is literally just getting back on the pitch and getting back into regular playing, and then long-term, I want to get back into that professional setting that I wasn't before. I've been a little bit unlucky with injuries before this, and then clubs obviously having financial situations and going bust. So it's in a pretty weird place rugby is, and it's made it even harder for people to get kind of either up to professional rugby or get back to professional rugby. So yeah, that's the long-term goal, is to get back to a professional club. But in the coming kind of months and then over the next year, it's going to be getting back, getting fit, and just getting some minutes under the belt.
No, completely. And so looking at your, we'll slightly move away from SSED and everything now, and looking at your career to date, we've had tons of sevens and 15s players come onto the podcast already. Talk me through at such a young age how you broke through. Obviously, you were at Scarlets a little bit, but then broke into the sevens circuit. How did that sort of transition come about?
I was at Scarlets since 16, and then finished my schooling down here back at home, and then moved up at 18. So had that first year of COVID is when I moved up that COVID year. So it was pretty bleak in terms of no games, but we were in a really fortunate enough position, just being at that professional environment, that we were still able to train and could still do our jobs basically. So yeah, did that, and then the following year everything started to open up again. So started playing, got lucky enough to represent the Scarlets on their senior team on a couple of occasions. And then it was January 2022. I had a meeting with our coaches, and they said that the Wales Sevens have been asking after me and wanted me to come in and join their kind of training group. So went in. It was literally a case of, they told me that on the Thursday evening. I was in there playing a game on the Friday morning. So it all happened pretty quickly. And then kind of a week and a half later, we were out in Spain playing the first leg of the HSBC World Seven Series. And mate, I just can't. It was an unbelievable experience. And that feeling of running out for your country first time and getting your first cap, I mean, it will never be beaten. Even though didn't have the best 2 weeks in terms of, I got knocked out in the first game against France, so the first weekend. So then missed the rest of that with a HIA, and then came back for the second week, started against France, got sent off straight off the kickoff, which wasn't ideal. came back on, snapped my Achilles. So it was a whirlwind of a 2 weeks, but I mean, something I'll never forget. And look, I've done it. I, even though it was only two short stints on the pitch, it's an international cap, and that's something that will be with me forever and that can never be taken away. So yeah, it's some of the toughest, kind of the toughest training and one of the hardest environments I've ever been in terms of the sevens. It was complete shock to the system going from 15 to sevens in space of a kind of a week and a half. There's so much to learn and it's a completely different game. But to be surrounded by some of the boys that I've kind of grown up watching play was pretty cool and felt pretty surreal and almost had a bit of an imposter syndrome. So walked in and that first time it's, why am I here? I can't really believe I'm here. And then it all becomes pretty real after that when you get all your kit and you have all everything named up and your big kind of whale suitcases. So yeah, it's I felt like a child again, getting all my stash for the first time.
You just touched next. Obviously, you played sevens at school, but then you were very much focusing on 15s. How did you find the transition from 15s to sevens? Was there anything that you particularly struggled with, or did you sort of pick up things that you'd done previously that sort of worked?
Yeah, I played sevens throughout all my school life, and but I never thought this is something that I would do. It never really came across my mind. It's always something that when I knew the Wales sevens was coming back after COVID, it was always, I was like, I would love to go and do that. It would be class, travel the world. And just play rugby. So never thought it would happen. And then when they contacted me, I was pretty shocked and just said yes straight away and was buzzing to get in there. And it was, yeah, that first day, obviously they had already been in for about a week. So they had learned some of the plays and that kind of style of play. And like I said, it's completely different from 15. So that transition, it was a definite shock to the system just with how much space there was on the pitch and how much kind of harder it is to defend, especially because there's just under half the amount of people, obviously, and it's, you're covering two people's positions. So yeah, it took a couple of days and had some meetings with the coaches and kind of caught up on what I've missed. But then after that, it became pretty routine. And then it felt like going back to 15s after that was alien.
And so do you think, long term, if you manage to get yourself back to where you want to be, you go back to the sevens and try and focus on getting back to where you were with sevens, or do you think you'd now stick with 15s?
I would love to get back to the sevens. I mean, it's a bit different now that Wales, England and Scotland all combined into that GB squad. So again, it's fighting for positions. It's quite a tough group to go into because you've got, there's 15 in each squad from each of those nations trying to get into a squad of 12, and it's pretty fierce, the competition. I'm a year or 2 years out of sevens, and it's will take a lot of kind of transitioning to get back into. So look, if the opportunity came about, I would take it with both hands and love to travel the world and get paid to play a game that I would do for free anyway. So yeah, but it's not a kind of main goal at the minute just because I need to focus on some other things first.
Yeah, of course. Do you think that sevens is traditionally, like, obviously much less physical than 15s? Would that potentially be more suited to, given you're going to have the protector on and everything?
I don't know. It's a weird one. Even though it's deemed less physical, I thought it was even worse than 15s, just because in 15s people are like you're carrying from a kind of 5-10 meter run up, and it's they're maybe bigger, yeah, but kind of everything's at half speed compared to sevens. You're carrying at flat out sprints, and the kind of the physical toll on your body of having these kind of 3-day tournaments is absolutely brutal. But it's also the mental side of having to get so revved up for a game, and that only being when in that whole warm up period to game period, 45 minutes, and then you have such a crash of trying to get calm your body down, and you normally have 3-4 hours in between a game, so boys, we'll go back to the hotel, we'll sleep. And it's just that really weird feeling of getting really up, then trying to calm down and reset everything and then keep going. And by the end of the 3 days, you're absolutely knackered. Just that emotional and kind of mental side of it is so hard. So I'd say maybe not as physical, but that mental battle's just completely different and something that I was not prepared for at all.
moving away the time of year. I mean, by the time this comes out, we might have just finished through the first round of Six Nations, but you've obviously got your ties with Wales. Any idea who you think is going to top the table this year?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting Six Nations because, I mean, especially for Wales, they've got such a new squad and such a mix with, they're not blessed with in terms of load of boys out injured. And probably, I would say 10 that would have been in that squad are unfortunately not able to be there. And then you've got Zamit, who's chosen to jump to the NFL, which I hope goes well for him, but it's a pretty bold call to make. And yeah, I hope it pays off. And then if England are in a pretty similar situation, they've got 7 new caps. But I just, even though France don't have DuPont, because he's chosen to go with the sevens and get some experience and prepare for the Olympics, it's going to be between France and Ireland. They're both too strong. They have some absolute freaks, and they're at club level, they're playing some really, really good rugby. So yeah, I think it's got to be between France and Ireland, and I don't want to say it, but I'll probably have to nail on France to win.
Really, I think DuPont's such a loss, and looking at all the squads, England have obviously had their massive revamp, no Farrell. Wales are, I mean, completely restarting. Italy and Scotland will always be Italy and Scotland. They'll both turn up on the day, but aren't realistically competing for the crown. Is Ireland's loss of Sexton bigger than France's loss of DuPont then?
I think in terms of experience and what he'll probably, like, Sexton gives you off the pitch, just that leadership, and basically it's like having another coach, but a player coach effectively. I think they will feel that, and it'll be pretty interesting to see who steps up. But apart from that, they've pretty much got the same squad going into these games as they did for the World Cup. So yeah, he will be a loss. And it's the same with France. France's team's pretty much the same as it did in the World Cup, and there was in the World Cup, and although DuPont is a absolute freak and probably the best rugby player in the world at the minute, the amount of quality nines that they've got in France, that if they were playing in any other nation would probably be nailed on to start, but unfortunately they're behind him. So it'll be interesting to see what he does with the sevens, but also what the new France are like without him kind of running the show.
And do you think this is a Wales squad for the future, or do you think it's right now Wales don't really know what to do? As in, obviously, I mean, it's nuts. Daff, who was the year below me at uni, is now captain. So he's 21.
Yeah, right?
Prepping for the next World Cup, or what do you think?
Yeah, this is at the start of a 4-year cycle. They'll be building already because of the amount of young players. So I think four or five of those boys. So Dav, I played Wales 20s with. Alex Mann, the new call-up, played Wales 20s with. Cam Winnett, I think, was year below, so I just missed out. There's like Mackenzie Martin. He was in 20s as well. It's ridiculous to see those boys that I know pretty well and kind of have that friendship with to then go see them. Well, they're like Dav going and captaining Wales at 21 is nuts. And Gatland's already called it that in the next World Cup, he'll be a nailed-on starter. If he keeps going the way he's going, he'll be a nailed-on starter. And I probably think he'll captain Wales for the foreseeable future, even though Jack Moggs will come back and they'll probably share it like Dewey Lake and Jack Morgan did in the World Cup. But yeah, it's definitely a team to build, and it's a chance to get these new boys in and around that environment and get them learning as much as they can, because that transition from club level up to international rugby is absolutely massive. So the earlier they can kind of get that fear factor and that shock out their system, the better it's going to be. And I think in the next World Cup, in 3-4 years, when Wales really start kicking over, I think it'll be pretty decent team to have.
You think rugby more so than, I'm trying to look at, say, football and cricket, it's so much more performance-based and form-based. If you look at cricket, you can get the likes of Ben Stokes. He could have an absolute, obviously he's captain now, but 5 years ago, he could have an absolute awful season, but 9 times out of 10, he'll be in 11. Whereas if you look at some of the selections, Slade come back into the England setup, Dom Brandt come back into the England setup, and then the likes of I'm obviously down from Exeter, so Ross Vincent going to see that purely form picked. Do you think that's is the case of rugby, that it's so much more than any other sport?
Yeah, I think if you're playing well and you've kind of had that good run of games and the start to the season, you can really kind of change get your name out there and change your tune. I mean, Rossi's one of those that I live with him, and I play with him in Dubai. That's where we both started our rugby together. And I remember, because he was one of my best mates out there, so we'd go play rugby together, and he was just, he won't mind me saying this, but some skinny South African kid that was always skillful. But he went, and then I left. He then went to South Africa and got his ties with Italy. So as kind of on a friendship level, I hope he goes and absolutely tears up, because it's so good to see someone you've grown up with from such a young age going and doing his thing. And he's an absolute freak of nature.
It's nice seeing another South African in the Six Nations.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll definitely be watching him and supporting him, and I've already spoken to him a bit. Just so buzzing to get into that and get into that setup, because I think he played the like Italy A game against Leicester last year, so he's already had that kind of that camp environment and that camp feel, and but he'll go on and he'll kick on. I back him to start each test.
And just before we finish, this Premiership season's obviously being dubbed as one of the like closest and hardest to call in a lot of years. Any team that you think have particularly got the edge, which are going to take it?
I would love Northampton to do it. I'd love the way they play. I love their style of rugby, and again, Finn is a mate of mine, so speaks to him quite regularly, and just the way they do things down there, it just sounds incredible. And Exeter, fair play, they've got a ridiculously young squad, and it's kind of paid off with three England call ups, a Scottish call up, and Rossi to Italy, so and Dav to Wales. So yeah, I hope Northampton do it. Exeter doing well, so but it'd be nice to see a change from Sarries or Quinns or someone like that sat at the top of the table.
Yeah, no, I think I can probably agree with that. Morgs, thanks so much. I mean, it's been a long time since we've actually spoken and played rugby when we were 10 or 11. But thank you so much. And obviously, we'll do anything we can do to help support and spread your awareness. But we wish you...
Amazing.
Kitty, obviously, she can join us today. But the best of luck with everything you guys are trying to do.
Thanks for having me, mate. That's it's been nice to just chat and get it all out there.
Yeah, no, top work, mate. So, it's very impressive. And obviously, so glad to see you're up and moving and fit and healthy.
No,
cheers, mate.
Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.